Please join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life-giving love and love-giving life. Spirit of nature that sometimes appears to be whimsical and with an incredible sense of humor, like the spouting of a flash mob song in the middle of a worship service, like the spirit of a winter storm that was supposed to have started with rain and had the last laugh as it began with snow and continued with snow for hours upon hours. Spirit of surprise in nature, like the daffodils that spring forth in the spring, like the turning leaves in the fall, those elements of nature which delight us and enrich our lives and encourage us to pay attention, to be aware, to be touched by nature, so that our nature within is connected to all nature without. May we be blessed and healed by our gathering together. May we seek to be the agents of change that we long to have in our world. Let us hold this moment together in quiet. Amen.
Our ancient reading this morning is the first three verses of chapter 2 from the book of Genesis. This passage follows the narration of the first 6 days of creation in which are noted the beginnings of heaven and earth and all things in and of heaven and earth. Chapter 2 begins, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing, so on the seventh day he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." Our modern reading is a transcript from an interview that was broadcast in National Public Radio's Fresh Air. Host Terry Gross is interviewing the children's book author Maurice Sendak about 6 months before his death, which occurred in May of 2012. Sendak is here speaking about issues of faith and aging. "I'm not unhappy about becoming old. I'm not unhappy about what must be. It makes me cry only when I see my friends go before me and life gets emptied. There's something I'm finding out as I'm aging, that I'm in love with the world. And I look right now as we speak together out of my window in my studio and I see my trees. My beautiful, beautiful maples that are hundreds of years old. They're beautiful. And you see, I can see how beautiful they are. I can take time to see how beautiful they are. It is a blessing to get old."
There's something that I'm finding as I'm aging, that I'm in love with the world. This morning's service is the second in a series that we call our February Focus Month. Our theme this year is of nature and spirit. Last week we established a framework for our four-week exploration within a religious and spiritual context that included first our Unitarian and Universalist traditions, and then second within a larger religious set of spheres that include Christianity, humanism, and earth-centered traditions, three of the four traditions from which we draw much of our accumulative knowledge. And then finally, within the spiritual context of the universality of nature and the human spirit. And at one point in the message, I spoke last week of the Universalist minister Quillen Shin and read an entry from his journal. It was an entry about a mountain outing he'd gone on with his Sunday school class in Gaysville, Vermont. And the irony in comparing his bucolic experience on that event to our culture's modern or postmodern relationship with nature, the irony was conspicuous. To summarize those differences, we noted Shin's comments are loaded with loving connections to the children and to the time that he enjoyed with them in the verdant hills of Vermont. He underscores the value in taking time out of our regular, hectic, and demanding schedules in order to appreciate the nature that we are in the midst of, that we are a part of. We can't do that if we don't remove ourselves from behind the barriers that we've put up to defend ourselves from nature. And therein lies the irony. We have so carefully protected ourselves from that which gives us some of our best access to the divine, to the goddess nature herself. And so it's within this irony that I want to continue today and engage a bit more deeply. Goddess nature, all that is, and Mother Nature's child, each of us. So I begin by addressing a very thoughtful email that I received this week, which came from a member of the congregation. And the question that was raised by the email was about the very destructive side of nature. We don't have to look hard to find incredible destruction that has been rained upon us by nature locally and globally. NEMO withstanding, at least locally here, NEMO withstanding, we've been hit by some incredible whoppers over the last couple of years. And the email said, "Nature is no 5 o'clock tea. I can stomach it better after antibiotics and the Salk vaccine." Me too. To a considerable extent, I'm all for antibiotics and vaccines, though I do have to say that I think we sometimes fail to recognize where these modern miracles breach natural laws which we might not even be aware of, and in crossing some of those unseen lines, we develop even scarier infections and sometimes crippling side effects. Still, for the most part, I'd much rather live in a world that has these modern miracles than in one that does not. It's okay with me not to have to contend with the bubonic plague or malaria or polio or so many other diseases. But to the heart of the question raised by the email, Mother Nature certainly is no cup of tea. That's right, I think. She's not. The question for me, though, is this. The question is, when did humanity develop the expectation that nature would ever be nice to us? I'm guessing that that notion came into being somewhere within the evolution of the development of our protective homes and places of work. Indoor lighting and heating and plumbing go a long ways towards creating the illusion that the world is a safe and a comfortable place for us to hang out in. From time immemorial, though, humankind has had other ideas and images about our Mother Nature, and they have not always been so nice. Those ideas have included the ultimate destruction of the child by its mother, the Greek goddess Medea, the Roman goddess Lamia, and the Hindu goddess Kali with all those incredibly sharp teeth. All of them were quite famous for eating their children. That theme of the devouring mother goddess is replicated among the deities of indigenous peoples on every continent of our world. Even the most beneficent of goddesses have been revered as a part of the cycle that brings life into being and then eventually calls it back again. Sometimes that cycle occurs within the greatest flow of beauty and graciousness. Sometimes it unfolds in colossal calamity with the harshest of turning points. Sometimes people live to be a ripe old age and then are surrounded by their loved ones at their time of death. Sometimes people die far too young, and what we experience is a tragedy. Sometimes a rosebud unfolds gloriously in the sun, and after enjoying weeks of magnificence, easily lets go of its petals and of its glory. Sometimes in great mighty storms, huge oak trees snap under the pounding siege of relentless gales. There are no guarantees as to how we might go when it's our time to go. There is only one guarantee: that one day we will surely die. So two questions come to mind. Is life, is existence, more or less beautiful because of the way it ends? I have to think not. Life and existence occur within the context of being. The flip side of that is that nothing can occur within a context of not being. being has value if for no other reason than that it is the fulfillment of the potential that's created by time and space. Being allows me to be here in your company, and that's value enough for me. Being is what is, and we are of it. It's a gift of God or of nature, and I'm happy to use either or both of those words in describing it. Ideas of God and nature both have to do with the energy and the determination of the universe that's required to create the universe. That cause or origin is so grand that it can't be identified or defined by any words from any language. Whatever metaphor we might choose to stand in for the cause of being, though, that metaphor will have something to do with mystery, I trust. It will have something to say to us about all that is. So to use the metaphor of mother is to recognize that we are born into our existence. It is to recognize that our lives occur within interconnected circles of birth and growth and fulfillment and death. Just as much as death must follow birth, birth follows death. That is the way of our mother nature, who, by the way, recycles everything. That is the way of all things, whether death is harsh or it is gentle. It changes everything for that which dies, and yet nature, God, goddess, the universe, always, always goes on. We seem to live in an age, though, this postmodern age of ours, where considerable effort is made to establish human supremacy over the cycles of nature. We start out trying to make things better, trying to make things more comfortable with heat and light and indoor plumbing, and then we seem to fool ourselves into thinking that we have subdued the powers of nature. In truth, we've only temporarily isolated ourselves from its rhythms and its cycles, its determination to bring and to keep bringing being into existence. We seek to understand nature or God or the goddess or whatever metaphor we choose. Recognizing that the deities of the past have been debunked, we proudly declare that there is no God. We fool ourselves into thinking that we are somehow self-derived, self-sufficient, self-determined. We fool ourselves into thinking that we're in charge somehow. And in truth, we've only temporarily isolated ourselves from an awareness, from a perception that we were brought into being and that we're held in being by mysterious forces that we can never know. And though they are beyond our capacity to comprehend, those forces are certainly deserving of our awe and our gratitude and our service. Each of us is, after all, Mother Nature's child, and we owe our mother awe and gratitude and service. So on Monday of this past week, I began in earnest to consider where this sermon might go this morning, what I might do with this theme that we've got going, and I didn't have a clue what I needed to do, where I might turn for inspiration, and I thought about it for a while, and then it came to me. I needed to go to the American Museum of Natural History in the city, and in particularly, I needed to go back to the Hayden Planetarium, a place where I haven't been for the last 12 years. It seemed like just the kind of place to have the kind of experience I needed to have in order to talk about the enormity of nature. For those of you who have never been, how many of you have been to the Hayden Planetarium? So, you know what I'm about to talk about. For those of you who haven't been there, the Star Show provides the most magnificent experience of the vastness of this universe. It allows for a brief moment, a suspended disbelief, in order to savor the universe in a fantastic three-dimensional format. And through sight and sound, you can physically sense a glimpse of the imperceptibility of the vastness and magnitude of this infinite universe that we are in. It's projected over your head and all around you. You are in it. You are of it. It makes you take note of what it means to be a human being on this tiny speck of a planet spinning around a star on the edge of a galaxy amid a super cluster of galaxies in a seemingly infinite collective of super clusters and maybe even uncountable other universes. There are a number of differences between the current show at the planetarium and the one that was there the last time I visited over a decade ago. And the predominant thrust the last time was just to provide this visceral experience of the vastness of the universe. And it did that really very well. It was one that was narrated by Tom Hanks, if you happen to catch that one. Well, now it's being narrated by Whoopi Goldberg. And this time around, there was an additional emphasis on the way that the universe is in the constant process of creating and recreating itself. Nebulae and novas and supernovas constantly giving way to new stars and constellations and galaxies. The jarring truth that I had not imagined until I saw it projected on the domed ceiling and all around me, though, is that the universe moves forward very powerfully. It does not ease its way into new creation. It creates and recreates itself through collisions of phenomenal impact and through explosions that are millions and gazillions of times more powerful than any atom bomb that's ever been imagined on this earth. And I felt like I was standing at the very edge of space, on the edge of existence, watching and learning something akin to what Adam and Eve must have experienced when they ate from the tree of knowledge. It was something that I experienced about self-awareness and about self-consciousness. It was frightening. It was frightening. I found myself considering the changes that are occurring on this blue-green planet of ours here locally in the galaxy, and I found myself feeling so vulnerable. Climate change and global warming are not fanciful illusions. They are a part of the way that nature creates and recreates itself. Our Earth has frozen over, and it has thawed out many times in the 4.5 billion years of life that this Earth has had. It's frightening. No wonder, I thought, no wonder we work so hard to insulate ourselves from the hardships of nature. Things aren't just hard, they can be devastating. No wonder we put so much energy into trying to cheat death. From this side of the line, death looks a lot like non-being. No wonder we so often try to fill our minds with facts and data about things. The vastness of what we do not know, cannot know, from our perspective on this little speck of a planet is so utterly immense. And to know who we are and what we are within the mix of all that is at the least spiritually daunting and naturally intimidating. And yet, knowing who we are and what we are is the quest we have been issued through the blessings of that self-awareness. Neil deGrasse Tyson is the director of the Hayden Planetarium, and I have to think probably the most popular physicist to ever be a part of that field of physics. Neil deGrasse Tyson says, "When I look up at the night sky and I know that, yes, we are a part of this universe, we are in this universe, but perhaps more important than both of those facts is that the universe is in us. Many people feel small because they're small and the universe is big. But I feel big because my atoms come from those stars. There's a level of connectivity." The thing is that our universe has already existed for over 13 billion years, and it's quite likely to exist far more than 13 billion years into the future. The thing is that, like ourselves, like our planet, the universe creates and recreates itself constantly. The Mother Earth goddess creates and recreates herself through cycles of birth and death, cycles that sometimes flow in a gracious dance and other times reel in tumultuous percussion. And all of it together is what gives spirit to life. And so somehow all of it together becomes precious and is beautiful. Somehow, all of it together is our existence. I doubt very much that we will ever have a full understanding of just why nature is nature. In all of the universe, that which is actual matter, that which has atomic substance, is so very minuscule in comparison to the enormity of the space between nature that substance. And yet the space between is alive with an energy that holds all matter in relationship with all other matter. That vast space, which makes up almost the entire universe, is that which holds life in being. The atoms, the actual substance of the universe, are so small they almost don't exist. The atoms that make up the desk on the top of this pulpit are just the smallest portion of this pulpit. Most of this pulpit and the desk on it is space. And yet we look and we see what is here. And there's an energy, there's a spirit that allows us to see that. And you can call that energy what you will. I'll call it the spirit of life, the spirit of the universe. I'll call it Mother Nature. I'll call it God or the goddess. It's an observable energy that does not have to exist, and yet it does. And because it does, so do we. Neil deGrasse Tyson suggests that our atoms come from out there, come from the stars, come from the universe. And because they do, so too are we made up of that energy, that spirit that fills the space between matter, that spirit which comes through the universe to us and through us. Even knowing that one day each of us will die, we can have faith that existence, that life, will go on in this universe. And with it, with that life that continues when our consciousness does not, with it will go the atoms and the spirit which have been each of us in our lifetime. That's what we get to work with. We have indeed eaten from the tree of knowledge, and as a result, we are left self-consciously knowing something about who we are. And that knowledge leaves us open to options of how we want to be in relationship with the rest of who we are, with the rest of nature. It's kind of tough to determine just how we might want to be in relationship with Alpha Centauri. And though it is still a challenge, it's less difficult to know how we might want to be in relationship with a world that is in such fierce flux as is ours. Though it might still be a challenge, it's less difficult to know how we might want to be in relationship with a culture that is in as much flux as ours. And I suspect how we might want to be in relationship even in our homes, which too are constantly in flux, and in all of our relationships similarly. We are called by life to live where we are. Being self-aware allows us to pay attention to matters of nature and to matters of the spirit. And when we pay attention, what we find are that those matters of nature and spirit are one and the same thing. So this is a topic we could go on about all day and maybe forever. And maybe it's a topic that ought to be worth a lifetime of exploration. For now, though, I want to close with a thought that's expressed by Toni Morrison in her novel Tar Baby. And in it, she summarizes well what I would like for us all to know. Toni Morrison wrote, "At some point in life, the world's beauty becomes enough. You don't need to photograph, to paint, or even remember it. It is enough. No record of it needs to be kept, and you don't need someone to share it with or to tell it to. When that happens, that letting go, you let go because you can. The world will always be there. While you sleep, it will be there. When you wake, it will be there as well. So you can sleep, and there is reason to wake." So finally, the thing that I want you to know is that there is something that I'm finding out as I'm aging, that I'm in love with this world. I look out and I see the snow that's fallen. I see the beautiful snow that's fallen. And I know that despite whatever else may come to pass, here I am at home. Whatever else may come to pass, here we are all at home. It is a blessing, this growing old. Our closing words by the late pop king, Michael Jackson. The earth we share is not just a rock tossed through space, but a living, nurturing thing. She cares for us. She deserves our care in return.